Let's get social. Connect with me at Bible Study Evangelista on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and now you can also find me on the number one Catholic app for iPhone and Android, Laudate. Let's connect. And now, let's get some Bible study in your pocket.
If you like having Bible study in your pocket and you have an iPhone or iPad, why not leave a review? Search Bible Study Evangelista in iTunes and tell everyone how you're loving and lifting all you've been given.
Sonia created the Love the Word Bible Study Method just for you, based on Mary's personal practice and formulated for your personality and temperament. Get your Love the Word meditations every Monday morning by signing up at BibleStudyEvangelista.com. Now, here's Sonia.
Welcome to the audio for the Catholic TV series, Evangelista Bible Study. I'm Sonia Corbett, your Bible Study Evangelista. If you are new to the show, this is actually we're doing a trial run here. I wanted to offer the audio of the Catholic TV show just because there are a lot of people who either don't want to or don't know how or can't access the television show, which is 12 Angry Men. We're looking at 12 people in the scriptures who dealt with anger and how God sort of helped them work through it in some cases. But welcome. I'm glad you're here. For those new listeners from Laudate, welcome to you as well. This series will continue through all 12 shows, and then we'll pick up with the weekly podcast. I already actually have begun that, and I know what the series is going to be, but we still have several weeks left of the Catholic TV show. So I just want to welcome you. I want to also shout out my newest friends of the show, Jane L., Linda B., Alejandra E., and Josh C. Thank you for loving and lifting me. I want to mention a couple of other things too. We have a pilgrimage coming up in May to the Holy Land, and I'd like to invite you. If you've not ever been, you should go. You really should go. And that's in May. That's in your email. Some information on that is in your email. Also, I have a new book out called Exalted. It's line by line on the Magnificat, Mary's Magnificat. And then finally, we have a weekend event in Hantsville, Alabama. It's going to be a sort of like a retreat conference kind of thing. So I'll be giving several talks there. I hope that you can try to make that. That's also on my website and in the email. So I would love to see you. I hope you will consider all those things, the pilgrimage, the retreat, and also the new book. So now to the show.
Did you know you can get Bible Study Evangelista radio notes and podcasts delivered to your inbox every Monday morning? Redeem your Mondays. Join thousands of your fellow listeners by subscribing at BibleStudyEvangelista.com. Now, here's Sonia.
Welcome to Evangelista Bible Study. I'm Sonia Corbett, your Bible Study Evangelista, and we are in our series on anger. And we're looking at people in the scriptures who dealt with anger. We're looking at how God helped them deal with their anger. And today we're going to take a look at Moses. Moses is a great character study for anger because he got in trouble for his temper several times. And I'm going to begin in Exodus chapter 2. And the woman took the child and nursed him, and the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of the water." In the Bible, names mean things, especially proper names. Whether it's a place or a person, either way, the name of a person really indicated who the person was and what the purpose of that person was. So when God communicated his name, it was actually an act of intimacy. He actually does this with Moses further on in the book. But Moses' name means drawn out. And interestingly, the word Exodus also means drawn out. So Moses was drawn out of the Nile. If you know the story, the Pharaoh was going to kill all the babies, the children of the Israelites. And so Moses' mother put him in a reed basket and floated him along the river, the Nile, and he floated right into
the arms of Pharaoh's daughter who was bathing. And so she picked him up and took him, as I just read, as her own son. And she raised him in the palace. And so his name then is going to kind of tell us some things about him. And it says in verse 11, "Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens." Now his brethren would have been the Israelites, and they were enslaved to Egypt, and they probably helped build some of the things, the architecture that we think about when we see Egypt now, even now. So he went out to his brethren and he looked at their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. And he said to the one who did the wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" And then he said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed that Egyptian?" So Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So after Moses fled to Midian, he stayed in the desert, on the backside of the desert, actually, for 40 more years. And he married. And when the Pharaoh died, he traveled back home. And that's when, while he was in the desert, that's where he encountered God in the burning bush. And God gave him the mission to rescue his people from slavery in Egypt and to draw them out through the Exodus and into the Promised Land. And so he does so. And, of course, that's a whole long story that we don't have time for, and that's not the point anyway. But after he leads the people out of Egypt, and they're in the wilderness, and they're headed toward the Promised Land, Moses gets in trouble with his temper again. Over in chapter 32, he has gone up to Mount Sinai to speak to God on behalf of the people. And when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the earrings that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. And he said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." And they said, and then when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast day to the Lord." And the Lord said to Moses, "Go, get down, for your people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf and worshiped it and sacrificed to it and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" And the Lord said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people." Now therefore let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation. And then Moses pleaded with the Lord his God and said, "Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power? Why should the Egyptians speak and say, 'He brought them out to harm them, to kill them in the mountains'? Remember Abraham." So the Lord relented from the harm which he said he would do. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tablets of the testimony were in his hand. Those tablets were the Ten Commandments. The tablets were written on both sides, on the one side and on the other they were written. Now the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing God engraved on the tablets. So it was, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he threw the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. So Moses sees that the people have turned back to their idolatry, really, and Aaron, his brother, has helped them do so, and he gets so angry, he takes the tablets and he throws them down to the ground, and they shatter. And in fact, it's not going to be until further on down, when they actually reach the Promised Land and are about to go in, that God gives him a second copy of those tablets. So, you know, in these cases, we might say that Moses' anger was justified. And possibly that's true. I mean, it even said that God was upset at them. But how we act when we're angry is really the issue. And that was always my experience with God. He would always, you know, it's not that you're angry, Sonia. It's that you throw things or that you scream and cuss and, you know, tear up things. And I understood that because early on in our marriage, my dad did not come to my wedding. I got married very young. I had been out of the house and on my own since I was 17, and I was 19 at the time, about to be 20. And I had my own place. I had a full-time job. I was in school full-time, and I was ready. And my husband and I, you know, we decided to get married. I sent my dad an invitation, and he wanted to see me. So I went to his house because I was afraid not to. And we were supposed to have a discussion, but you don't really discuss things with my dad. He tells you what you're going to do, and then you do it. And I knew that that was the case, but I was not prepared to do what he wanted this particular time. He wanted me to push the wedding back, and I wouldn't do it. Partly, not so much that I was being stubborn, although that was probably part of it. But the other thing was my husband and I were living together, and I was trying to get out of that situation as quickly as possible. So I went to talk to my dad, and he demanded that we push the wedding back, and I told him no, and it got loud, and I flipped him a bird, and I walked out, and he chased me out of the house saying, "You better be sure this is what you want. You better be sure." And I said, "I'm sure." And I got in my car, and I squealed tires and came home, and he didn't come to the wedding. And we didn't speak to each other for about 5 years, maybe not that long, but several years. And then one day I came home from work, and there was a pink birthday card on the kitchen table in my dad's handwriting. It was addressed to me, but it was in my dad's handwriting, and my heart started pounding. And I picked up that card to read it, and my husband had already opened it. And I absolutely lost my mind. I did a black outrage that day, and I attacked him physically. I had never had a black outrage before, and thankfully I have never had one since, because it scared me. And I went to God and I said, "What in the world is wrong with me?" I was humiliated. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. It still is shameful to me that I did that to my poor husband. But it was sort of a light bulb moment for me, because He really spent some time with me and just said, "Look, you're going to ruin your whole marriage if you don't get a hold of this." And my bigger fear was I had begun to notice that I was starting to parent the way my dad had parented me. And that terrified me. And I knew that if I didn't get a hold of my anger, that I was going to end up hurting my children the way I was hurt. And I didn't want to do that. So I just went to God and I said, "I don't care what you have to do to me. I don't care. Whatever it is that you have to do, please help me get a hold of this. Help me get rid of it." And I didn't even know what the root was. I had no idea. But he helped me. He helped me a step at a time. And that's what happens here with Moses. Now, he's been in trouble twice, right? He's murdered the Egyptian. He's broken the Ten Commandments. And here we're going to see that there was no water for the congregation. I'm in Numbers 20. So they gathered together against Moses and Aaron, and the people contended with Moses and Aaron. And they spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness so that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It's not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take your rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, and speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. So you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals." So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him, And he gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" And then he lifted his hand, and he struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them." So his temper got the best of him again, and instead of speaking to the rock, he took his rod and he banged the rock. Now, why that was important is because eventually the rock, we'll find out in St. Paul in Corinthians chapter 10, he talks about the rock being Christ. And so you don't whack Jesus to get what you need, right? You just ask. And so because it was that symbolism would carry forward, and because Moses did not do what God said specifically, he got in trouble. He didn't get to go to the promised land. He was able to look at it on Mount Nebo, but he was not able to go in. Joshua led the people in. Now later he was allowed actually to see it on the Mount of Transfiguration. And I was just there last week actually, and it's so high you can see all the way down into the land, the promised land, and it was a land of figs and pomegranates and milk and honey, as the Bible says. It was that kind of fruitful land, but at this point they haven't reached that land yet, and so they're in the desert. There's no water in the desert, and so they start to complain and murmur, and they do it throughout the entire journey from Egypt to the promised land, which took them 40 years when it really should have only taken a week. So God was constantly providing for them. He made sure they had food in the manna. He made sure they had water in the rolling rock. He rained quail down out of the sky. He made sure they had leadership. He made sure they had a place to worship. He was protecting them all the time. He was providing for them. The problem here is that Moses is trying to fix the situation himself. And when we get into fix-it mode rather than asking God for help and to help us fix the situation, that's when we get in trouble. That's when we get angry. We try to force and we try to control. And as soon as we do that, that's when we get in trouble with our tempers. And that's what happened to Moses. Now, this continual drip of murmuring and complaining and disobedience of the people would have tried anyone's patience. Absolutely. And the thing about Moses is, you know, he did get angry and even violently angry, but he pleaded on behalf of the people to God to not destroy them, to have mercy on them. So he was a good leader, and he was the kind of leader that God really wanted. He just had this issue with his temper. And so that's part of why we're looking at him. Now, I actually particularly like Moses because he reminds me so much of my husband and even my son. So throughout our marriage, I've really had to deal with what I call my husband's gift of criticism. And that's particularly difficult for me because I can't stand criticism because of the way I grew up. I am like OCD and perfectionist. And so to be criticized is really difficult for me because I try so hard to do things perfectly, or at least excellently. It's not the criticism part, really, that my husband has in common with Moses. And I didn't know this until far further into our marriage. But the real thing they have in common is this gift of righteousness and this gift of justice. And that's, Moses was the law bringer. And that's part of why, because he had that gift of righteousness and justice. So the criticism that my husband offers everyone and everything is really part of that gift. It's a little out of balance because of the way he grew up as well. But I had a hard time with it personally, partly just because of the way I grew up. So naturally, we butted heads all the time. His comments were always, "You're too sensitive," and mine was always, "You're too critical." And so we worked on that the first 20 years of our whole marriage, right? But we kind of did a little dance with that, and he has become less critical, and I have become less sensitive as we have both grown, and the Lord has helped me through that woundedness. But then my son, my oldest son, the older he got, the more the more he started to really get on my nerves, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And he was about 20, and he would come home from work late in the evening. He worked in retail, and I don't do well at night. I'm not a night owl. And so I'm tired, you know, and I don't have a lot of juice left. And he would come home every single night from work, and he would just unload on me all of the day and all of the crappy people and all of the crappy things that happened. And it was just negative, 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 negative. And I just could not take it. After, you know, months of this kind of thing, I couldn't figure out why I was just always so on edge with him. And it made me critical of him, actually. And it bothered me a lot because I love him. You know, I don't want him to feel like he can't talk to me. And I couldn't figure out what it was that was bothering me so much about it. Eventually, he ended up leaving home because my husband kind of got in his face one night and they had words, and then he packed his bags and left, and he was gone for 3 or 4 days. And during that time, we did a lot of soul searching. And what I discovered was the reason I was having such a hard time with my son is because he was so much like my husband in the early days of our marriage, because they have the same exact temperament and personality. And so they're both naturally critical. They see every wrong thing, and not only do they see it, but they have to say it, right? So it's just negativity a lot. I felt like I was a balloon living in a cactus garden. And every time I would like inflate myself up and be up, I was bumping up against one of them, and they just, you know, it was just this constant, it felt like they were sucking the life out of me. And I remember even telling my husband, you know, I can deal with one of you, but I can't deal with both of you. So one of you has to go. And so then they had the big blow up one evening. And as I said, it was because they're so similar. They have he's the oldest same-sex child, and psychologists will tell you that your oldest same-sex child and the same-sex parent will butt heads. And so they do that, not often, because my son is a really good kid, but it just got to be where the whole house was just sort of, it just had this really negative vibe, and I hated it, and I hated how I was feeling toward my son. And I kept asking God, what is the deal here? What's happening? And finally, when they had the blow up and my son left, he was gone for a couple days, and thank goodness we knew where he was, and he was with a family that we love very much and that we knew would take care of him but not let him get away with anything. And while he was gone, my husband and I both, as I said, we did a lot of soul searching, and in my daily readings, it was just, you know, this is how God is. This is why it's so important to be in the scriptures on a daily basis. Because what was in the readings that day, the day right after my son left, was, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. And I know after years and years and years of Bible study that when God speaks to you, he's speaking about you, not somebody else. And so I knew that he was speaking to me, and immediately I realized that I had contributed to the difficulty that my son and I were having, partly because I had become so critical of him in my heart, but also even with my words. And that criticism that I couldn't stand from him, and the negativity, I was actually projecting back on him. And it broke my heart. You know, I thought, I never wanted to do this to my kids, and here I'm doing it. And my husband, of course, he reads the same readings. You know, they're the readings for the day. And so there we were, and both of us realized what was really happening, and it broke our hearts. And so, you know, how do you fix that then? So I just kept, I tried to stay out of the situation between my son and my husband, because I wasn't present when they had the big blow up. I didn't really know what was going on. I had my husband's story, but I didn't have my son's. And I didn't want to get in the middle of it, so I didn't say anything about it. I just prayed, and I just asked God, please, you know, however we have to work this out, just can you put us in the right position and give us an opportunity to do that? And eventually, my son did come home, and we actually had a hard time even for a while after that, just trying to reset, right? And so we all really worked on, he worked on his issues, we worked on ours. But what became very clear to me is that it was just a personality and temperament thing. And my difficulty with it was the same difficulty that I had had with my husband, because they're so similar. And it felt like it came from left field. I never in a million years would have expected my daddy thing to be provoked by my son. And so I didn't recognize it when it happened until later. But God is faithful. He's so faithful to continue to help us work through the woundedness that we battle, and even the negative behavior that sometimes can come out of that. And He uses all of the people around us. And so Moses was learning it with the people in the wilderness, and Aaron was learning it, and I was learning it from Moses as God was using Moses to speak to me about my own temper and my own issues and my own anger and my own criticism. And so one of the things that we can take away from Moses is that the people around us are there for a reason, and especially the ones that we dislike, because God uses them to teach us things about ourselves. And so when we're doing our daily readings, as I hope you have begun to do, when we're doing that and we're looking to hear from God, we need to keep in mind that God speaks to us about us, not other people. And so when we hear something like, "Fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath," you know, I could have easily looked at my husband and said, "You're provoking our son to wrath." And he was. But the truth was, I was too. And so that's a good principle, first of all, is to always remember that when you get something out of the scriptures, that's for you. But number two, that we can't try to control the people around us and try to force them to do what we want. Instead, we have to suggest and invite, and especially with adults. And Moses shows us that we have to be patient with one another, and we have to listen to what God says, because when God gives us direction, He's doing it so that we can all learn from one another. And He does it in the way that is the most merciful and the quickest, really, if we'll just listen to Him. So when we do get angry at other people, we need to be careful how we behave in that anger. And it's not bad to be angry. It's just we have to be careful how we act out of that. We don't want to hurt the people around us. We don't want to hurt the people we love. We don't want to destroy our relationships. We don't want to be bad parents. We don't want to be bad coworkers. So we just have to keep Moses in mind that we don't want to be whacking on people with our tempers. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
If you love having Bible study in your pocket, you can become a friend of the show. Click on the yellow Friend of the Show button on BibleStudyEvangelista.com and become a supporter of any amount and any frequency.
Thank you for listening to the Bible Study Evangelista Show. Find out more at BibleStudyEvangelista.com.